Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Rancher Government Solutions. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
Agency and IT security people are well aware of the need to understand and secure the software supply chain. Doing so demands significant investments in skills and procedures, for example, in obtaining software bills of material, then understanding what's in them. For insight on this and other software supply chain matters, I spoke with the senior advisor and strategist to the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, Alan Friedman. And let's talk about the big issue of supply chain security, software supply chain security. Maybe from CISA's standpoint, outline what are the basic principles in assuming and trying to get control over the security of the software supply chain? Because when you start pulling it apart, it's a really big issue.
It is. And part of that is just software has eaten the world, as the famous Andreessen quote is. And so there's software in everything. We need to use it. It's not going to change anytime soon. So we just need to understand what we have. So the model starts with transparency, knowing what you have. And then it moves on to understanding what are some of the assurances we can say about how that software is created. And then looking to the future in trying to understand how the quality of the software that we use can be better and more secure.
And it strikes me there are two aspects of this, because in the federal agency context, people buy software and that's composed of coded by the manufacturer, the inculcation of open source by that manufacturer, you know, Lord knows. And then there is that which the agency may have developed itself or uses its own coders, as we see returning to the military after a hiatus of a couple decades. They're doing their own coding again. And you see this across the government. And that's really two different issues, isn't it? The supply chain, quote unquote, of your own developed software versus what you buy.
They are. So first, in terms of what we buy, that was laid out by the White House in Executive Order 14028 of 2021. And the goal there was to say, hey, let's put some basic standards, some minimum thresholds on what we're buying. So you got to be this high to ride. That called the of the document is nothing there should surprise anyone who's thought about security, right? Are you using decent authentication? Are you using basic analysis tools that have been around for, you know, a decade? And of course, near and dear to my heart, do you actually know what is in your software? And this is the idea of an SBOM.
Right. So in other words, to make an analogy, you have to know that the food you're ordering is from a clean kitchen before you can start worrying about what's in the ingredients that they put on the plate in front of you.
So that's a powerful analogy when we think about food, because one, we all kind of understand it. Two, the starting point for a lot of our thinking about food is the list of ingredients. And so one thing to know about a list of ingredients is that by itself, it won't protect your family from something they're allergic to. By itself, it won't keep me on my nice 2023 diet. And by itself, it won't make sure that I'm following a religious restriction or a plant-based diet or something like that. But good luck doing any of those things without the list of ingredients. And so that's the core behind an SBOM. It's a data layer that says this piece of software uses these other pieces of software, which uses other pieces of software, right? Software today, even in very developer-heavy environments, isn't written from scratch. It's assembled from lots of other pieces, both proprietary and, of course, open source.
And what makes software bills of material different from other bills of material? Say, if you bought a car, which actually has fewer parts than the average software application, which may have tens of thousands of pieces, but you get a list of nuts and bolts and brake assemblies and yada, 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 that really wouldn't tell you much about how well that car is going to do. But there's something essential about an SBOM that does tell you something. Maybe explain that a little bit.
So one of the, like, what are we trying to track when we're trying to track software? And the idea is to say, I need to know what I have so that I can map it to other sources of intelligence. So if you have access to global part lists, then you can sort of think about it from a hardware perspective. But the value of software is we, both here at CISA and across the software ecosystem, have set up infrastructure for thinking about vulnerabilities, thinking about quality. And there are, you know, now dozens of startups that are also helping you think about this for based on the risk that a particular agency or company cares about. So that's a core part of it. One other thing that I want to point out is it's kind of ironic that a lot of modern software around, you know, DevSecOps stole a lot of our ideas from heavy industry. This started off in, you know, going all the way back to Toyota in the 1950s and the Deming Revolution said, hey, you need to track where your parts are coming from and you need to find good suppliers. And we're trying to carry that over into software. Now, the SBOM by itself won't guarantee that, but having the visibility allows us to feel confident. And even as companies start to share what they have, they're going to make sure, oh, well, we don't want to tell people that we're using wildly out-of-date software. So having an SBOM and knowing that someone might ask for it allows a good internal excuse for organizations to spend more resources and rethink their software development practices. Or alternatively, if they already have great software development practices, they should be able to trumpet it and use that as a competitive advantage when selling to our agency.
I'm glad you brought up Dr. Deming. I actually interviewed him once a long time ago.
No kidding.
So studied some of those methodologies. And what you said earlier that you have to compare the SBOM to other sources of information, the implication is the SBOM itself is not useful unless you have a database, so to speak, of what are the vulnerabilities known to be associated with these components. You need both to be able to make use of the SBOM?
I wouldn't say it's not useful. So an SBOM has real value across the entire lifecycle of software. So we can talk about building software, buying software, choosing software in the case of open source, building, buying, and then operating. So from a building perspective, it's very difficult to claim that you have a secure process if you don't know what you have. And so we want to make sure that organizations who are building software can sort of have internal tools to say, are the things that we're shipping, are they vulnerable or out of date before we even start? That's the value of tracking it. And, you know, we've heard stories of large software projects, not beyond just security, about quality and efficiency. So large software projects that use 3, 4, 5 different versions of the same underlying library, which is kind of crazy. So SBOM as a data management piece allows you to have much better understanding of quality. And then for folks who buy software or who are selecting open source, again, you want to say, are there risks even before I've signed on the dotted line? And indeed, why would I buy from someone who couldn't tell me what they were selling me? And so, again, it's a way of rewarding organizations that have invested in good product security.
Before you get to the last point, let me just ask on that multiple libraries example, that would say that mm-hmm. there's almost a kind of sloppiness maybe or carelessness built into the product if a multiple libraries for a particular function might have been used in different locations, makes it harder to maintain. It might affect performance and predictability of outcomes. That could be an issue there.
I wouldn't use the word sloppy, but lots of organizations have certain stovepipe development processes. And you're exactly right. A lot of this is about total cost of ownership, total cost of maintenance, and just understanding how we make sure that there's this property that we all know and love called resilience. An organization can respond quickly when there is new risk data. And that ties into sort of the operational response, which is when we discover the next Log4j, when the seekers point out that someone has been trying to infiltrate American networks, we want to make sure that we can respond quickly. And again, an SBOM won't magically keep bad guys out. But once we identify the risks, whether it's a vulnerability or even more importantly, what's an exploitable vulnerability? CISA has been working on maintaining the known exploited vulnerability list. Everyone can quickly check, am I affected? And it's very hard to do that across a complex, large organization without having this underlying supply chain data.
And you had one more point you were going to make about the content of the SBOM.
Sure. So, and use this, right? What's the value? So, one, there's real value in just knowing that you have it, right? An agency could ask for an SBOM and then just put it in a corner today. So the, you know, how do we use this data? How do we turn data into intelligence into action? So the first step is saying, hey, does the supplier even have this? So this is We're not interested in using it. We just don't want to buy from someone who doesn't have this data internally, because they need to know how to fix their software when we discover new risks. Now, the second piece is to say, well, I have a pile of data. I can leave it over in the corner. And when there is the next Log4j or critical response, then we can set up some pretty simple scripts. So we have the data and we can grep to figure out, is there risk? Moving forward, we're going to see a lot more tools that can use this data. So today in the software, there are lots of tools that will generate an SBOM for you. And there are lots of startups providing services for, you know, specialty sectors. So for example, there are operational technology firmware for, you know, energy and applications. There are a whole different set of tools for cloud native software. So generation, there's a vibrant ecosystem. What to do with it is still emerging. And that makes sense, right? Until recently, no one had piles of SBOMs. So it would be weird if there were lots of tools. From the federal space, I'm not sure we want to spend a lot of time developing complex federal specific SBOM consumption tools, because again, these are things that the private sector needs as well. And we're starting to see them emerge. Some of them are pretty basic, which is, how do I take SBOM data and map it to vulnerability databases? And some of them are going to be more specific, right? What are the particular risks about interference in open source projects that I'm using? And then the ideal case is to integrate this into services and tools that agencies are already using, right? We already have vulnerability management. We're working on getting more sophisticated asset management. We have config management, and some agencies even have data lake models. So all of these are places where we want to use SBOM because they're already part of our security strategies. And so we want to integrate them in there.
Alan Friedman, Senior Advisor and Strategist to the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Rancher Government Solutions, the leader for securing Kubernetes and cloud-native containerized applications for the U.S. government, has launched Rancher Government Carbide, a revolutionary supply chain security solution in response to the increasing threat to the nation's software supply chain. Carbide simplifies Kubernetes security management by providing a better, more standardized way for users to verify and validate that their software is safe and secure. To learn more, visit ranchergovernment.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Alan Friedman, Senior Advisor and Strategist to the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Our topic is securing the software supply chain and using software bills of material. And maybe if you could touch on the open source question, because many software applications delivered are built from those open source components. They're not from necessarily, you know, the company's old stuff from years ago. And are there any particular issues with open source that people need to be aware of?
So the security of open source software has been a renewed priority for across the administration since the Log4j crisis in December of 2021, where a lot of us spent a lot of time hunched over our tiny travel laptops in family guest rooms around the country. So one thing I do want to underscore is right, for the past few administrations, there has been a shared vision that open source is not different from proprietary software, right? It is, we don't choose favorites, we pick the best option. So we want to make sure that open source is not being singled out as uniquely insecure, or for that matter, uniquely more secure. So there's still work across there. One of the core challenges we think about open source, and this is why it's unique, is it is provided as is, right? There aren't long-term contract support for non-commercial open source. And that means that we, as users of the software, just need to pay more attention, right? It's not something that's completely free for the users. It's provided as is, and we can't just go and engage. And so one of the, you know, obviously here SBOM is a core component, which is to say we need visibility so that we can first be more resilient in our response and ultimately be more proactive to say, well, let's look to projects that may have particular risks. So is my brand new software program dependent on one library that only has one maintainer? And that maintainer seems to take lots of vacations. We love when people take vacations, but right from a resiliency perspective, we need to sort of track that. And then there are a number of other pieces that are people are focusing on across the administration. This is being led by the Office of the National Cyber Director, but of course, CISA's playing a key part. One of those pieces is thinking about the future of memory safety, right? This is very relevant to government, where a lot of critical infrastructure and underlying pieces of software are traditionally written in C. And as my colleague Bob Lord is fond of pointing out, most modern measures of what is actually vulnerable, the vulnerabilities are being found as memory flaws, all of its long and very clever attacks that are built on that model. So how can we shift to a world where we're using, you know, more type safe, memory safe approaches? And of course, that has strong implications for open source.
Right. Okay. And just to put a fine point on it, there are commercial distributions of open source that have value added wrapped around them. And you see this, it started in the Linux industry, basically on a large scale, but it's spread to other areas. And so any particular concerns there, you have to know what's been added.
So that's the trade-off, which is you get longer term support, which again is key, right? I'm building this now, and so I want support for it moving forward so that I, as an agency, don't have to sort of update my entire complex dependency tree. We're seeing this emerge in some of the modern areas, right? The cloud native world began as almost entirely open source. And then a lot of other organizations are saying, well, we'll help you with value add assurances to sort of think about the security and make sure that we have some greater visibility there.
And when you are using commercial cloud services, as practically every agency is, you don't own the software, but you are invoking software. I mean, they have catalogs of 10,000 services they offer, and you pick which ones you want to use the cloud beyond just bare metal as infrastructure. Do you need an SBOM or some kind of a manifestation for those services, do you think?
So we here at CISA have an industry-led working group that we facilitate that asks that exact question, which is what does SBOM and transparency mean in the cloud domain? A lot of the original discussion around SBOM was focused on on-premise software. Very few people say the future of software is on-premise, although we are seeing more return than we may have thought. The vision there is to understand what does dependency graph mean, and ultimately, how to create a vision of dependency, not just of software, but of services as well, right? If I'm using an online application and they're using someone else's service and they're using someone else's service, how do we get that tree that captures not just the open source world, but the risk world? This is cutting edge stuff. And I'm really proud that CISA has been able to sort of not say this is the solution, but to bring together experts from the supplier side, from the customer side to talk through this.
And what would you say industry's use of SBOM's maturity is? Let's say their software supply chain security maturity, and not to confuse that with CMMC. But does industry, does the Ford Motor Company or something, use SBOM's routinely in evaluating their software and their security?
We're starting to see a rapid shift. So this was something that a few corners of the industry were working on. And of course, a lot of the traditional software security applications were offering SBOM. And then a couple of years ago, more and more people started to realize this. And this was, of course, in light of a range of attacks that we're all seeing and sort of a general appreciation that transparency is the foundation of further action. So there are a lot of industries that are moving very quickly in this direction. The medical device manufacturing community, which was nudged by their regulator, the FDA, to say, you got to have an SBOM. And I think it's been a huge phase shift. That was not seen as a sector that was traditionally had great security. They've had moved ahead leaps and bounds. The automotive sector is starting to move a lot quickly in this case. There's the automotive ISAC, which is sort of helping them, giving them a safe space to experiment. We're seeing a lot of discussion in energy. And at the more advanced side in the cloud native world, there are lots of tools. Kubernetes, someone published an SBOM of Kubernetes a year and a half ago. So we're starting to see this as people realize that we need to understand what's in our containers as well.
And it strikes me that the SBOM should itself almost be SBOM as a service. And what I mean is software is not unchanging. There are patches, updates, new functions, new features added almost as soon as you acquire it. And every one of those would require an update to the SBOM, correct?
This is one of the other pieces that is emerging, but is not yet mature, which is the data management side of this. And this is true for any new cybersecurity space, whether it's threat intelligence or endpoint management, where you really sort of need to say, okay, I have this data, but now how do I track it? How do I manage it? How do I prioritize it? And so if any of the folks out there are interested in starting their own company, you know, I think great opportunity to sort of help with the plumbing side. It's not the most exciting part, but it's one of the things that every organization needs to track. And so understanding that I have this SBOM for this piece of software, and then it got updated, only one of them got updated, so I need to make sure that I can track. That's part of a known challenge in an organization, right? Asset management, how do I track different pieces of software in my organization? And that's really where we need to get to, is to sort of be able to map the supply chain metadata to the software. And that's a plumbing issue that we'll get better at, but there may be some growing pains.
And organizationally, what are your thoughts on the best practices for ingesting the SBOM? Who should ingest it? Who should own it? Who should evaluate it? Is it the security group? Is it the program management? I mean, finance, perhaps? I mean, who owns the SBOM and the process required to get value out of it?
You know, who owns something is a time-honored debate in cybersecurity. I'm a veteran of who owns the firewall, the security team or the network team? And I think, again, it follows the life cycle of software. So before you buy something, the contract folks are going to be the ones to ask for it, but the analysis should be done by the security team. Once something's on a network, it's going to depend on the maturity and the sophistication of that network, right? The ideal place is, you know, maybe the software itself can tell a scanning tool, here's where my SBOM is. But I think it's going to vary based on what tools people are using and relying on today, right? Do people see this as a config issue? Do they see this as an asset issue? Or is it just a pure vulns issue?
But it's time to get started regardless.
It definitely is. And the easiest thing that I hope everyone starts to do, whether you make software or buy software or use software, is ask for this. If you can't get it, ask why. And one of the lovely things that I've seen a lot more people start is they say, if you can't give me an SBOM, what else are you going to give me, right? Are you going to take some money off? Are you going to improve the quality of my maintenance contract? Because again, not being able to provide one says something meaningful about the long-term cost of ownership. And so it's not just asking for it, but asking for it with some longer-term discussions about why not.
And that's Alan Friedman, Senior Advisor and Strategist to the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA. For more on this interview or to share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Rancher Government Solutions on Federal News Network.
Rancher Government Solutions, the leader for securing Kubernetes and cloud-native containerized applications for the U.S. government, has launched Rancher Government Carbide, a revolutionary supply chain security solution in response to the increasing threat to the nation's software supply chain. Carbide simplifies Kubernetes security management by providing a better, more standardized way for users to verify and validate that their software is safe and secure. To learn more, visit ranchergovernment.com.